This is Lila Glasso-Francis for the Carolyn Glasso Bailey Foundation, and today we're bringing you another podcast, this time with four artists who are featured in OHAI Invitational 2017 California Space and Light at the Porch Gallery OHAI. Thank you, Eric Min-Swenson of EMS Arts, for collaborating with Porch and with us. A portion of the proceeds benefit the foundation. This year's show features artists Kelly Berg, Brad Howe, Andy Moses, and Jennifer Wolfe. Collectively, their work leads one to question and appreciates the exceptionally Californian experience of light and space, says co-curator Swenson. And indeed, in its evocative optical physicality, abstractionist though it is, this is work that both describes a palpable sense of place and also deftly transcends that place's boundaries. Catalog essay is available through Porch Gallery, and the exhibition will be up through July 2nd. Please join CGB Foundation board member Chris Bailey as he leads these four amazing artists through a conversation about their work. So I will just let you guys begin, and we're going to go about probably 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you, Lila. And thank you, everybody, for coming today. This is a really special opportunity to hear such amazing artists talk about their work, and I'm personally really excited about it. Your show is really amazing, and I think it's very, very special that you're here today. If you guys don't know me, I'm was married to Carolyn, who this foundation is named after, and I had the privilege of joining her on countless artist visits and studio visits and setting up shows and things, and I guess we can say that her presence is still pretty strong through our organization, and she just wants you guys to know that your show rocks. And she's very, very excited about it because I think what you guys have done is really special. I'd also like to thank Eric Min-Swenson for organizing the show and bringing you guys together. It was really amazing that he did that. How I thought that we would start today was that we would just go around in a circle and each of one of you would introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your work for a few minutes, and then we would open up the conversation to other topics about such things as abstraction and form, and I actually wrote some notes here. Form, substance. And darkness and light, abstraction and representation, and stasis and movement. All right?
Cool.
So, Brad, why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your work as an artist, your history a little bit, what you made for the show, and we'll just go around the room.
Sure. So I'm Brad Howe, and I didn't study art, never imagined I would be an artist, and I was studying history in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, and I made friends with architecture students, and the architecture students were inviting me on weekends to, you know, hang out with them, and they were doing their models and things, and I got so excited about making, I was their assistant running around gluing things together, and I thought, wow, this is quite a wonderful pursuit, you know, I was looking at it from the architecture, and that time I had hoped to be working as a diplomat in the State Department or something like that. And I thought that the only way that I could sort of, you know, participate in the world and feel good about it was like politically. And when I discovered art through the architects, that, man, you can actually have some effect on people's lives through making objects. And that was sort of the big discovery. And the fact that I sort of opened my eyes to art in Brazil, I opened my eyes in a sort of a psychedelic culture, you know, a culture of extreme emotions and extroverted expression where people wear, you know, pink and green and yellow clothes down the street and act like that's absolutely normal. And the sort of the fearlessness that Brazilians have was how I entered into the experience of making. So when I started to make the objects, I decided I was going to be a sculptor. My father's a carpenter. I wanted to also produce objects. I wanted to have this exuberance that I was experiencing in Brazil as part of my expression as a maker of objects. So everything I painted was Technicolor. And then I discovered there were art movements out there that I was unaware of, like the Memphis group from Italy, and mainly pottery and furniture and such, but it was using, you know, every pattern known to man stuck on the same object. And I thought, well, I can live with that. That's like Carnival in Brazil. And so in the beginning, a long trajectory of my work was super colorful. But now, 35 years later, you know, I feel like I want to explore different directions. So I decided to strip all the color off the work. And now the pieces that are in this exhibition here in Ojai at the Porch Gallery are polished stainless steel. It's about, you know, it's like a Macbeth. You know, I sort of cleaned it all off as much as I could. So what I discovered in making stainless steel sculptures that are polished, I discovered the mirror. I mean, I imagined what the mirror would be, and I'm familiar with Amish Kapoor's work, but I didn't know what it would mean for me. And what I discovered was that the object starts to disappear. And what I experience was the object as a screen, like a magic mirror in a fairy tale, and that I could see the world around me in a way that I couldn't see through direct vision or peripheral vision. It was a completely different kind of vision. And then, of course, the funhouse aspect of making it concave or convex all has its little tricks. And then I realized that it became a way for me to see the world around me, and that the artwork stopped being the focus, and the focus was my living experience that I could have access to through the surface. And what has become exciting to me in incorporating it into a group show like this here at the Porch Gallery is that it actually allows me to have a conversation with the other artists, in that I can see their work in my work. And then soon, I don't see my work at all. I only see their work, but I see it in these crazy distortions. Like, I believe that I saw Andy's work that was square on the wall, but in the polished stainless steel sculptures, it's this crazy elongated rectangle. And I thought, well, where's this rectangle piece? And I turned around, there is no rectangle piece. The old rectangle piece only exists in that reflection. So the idea of sort of this alternative vision is I find fascinating, and I like contouring, what crafting these objects very well, like I made the other pieces that I made previously, but I like that they contain some sort of secret, some kind of spontaneous site-specific event that I can never anticipate, and so it has kind of a magic aspect to it. So what I was trying to sort of sew together, what it is that all of us have happening for us in this, in the work that I see on the walls and with my piece, is as much as it's about space and light, I think it's about time. Because I start to feel that for me, when I walked into the gallery today and spent time in there, I felt like there was something magical happening at that place, at that time, this very specific way, that there was a kind of reverberance between all the artwork on the wall and the objects on the floor that made that, like, this is never going to happen again. This is a very special moment when we're all together having this conversation, but this is a very specific time in all of our lives, and I feel like time is what I discovered being in that space today.
Wow, thank you. That's very, very true. It's amazing, the reflections of the other artists' artwork off of your pieces. It really creates a resonance that's pretty amazing.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wolf, and I share time between Venice Beach and Ventura, California. Originally, I'm actually from Ventura. Moved to LA and Venice to go to UCLA. I got my undergrad degree in art history and then moved to Venice in 1998 and started a little studio gallery space on Abbot-Kinney Boulevard where I showed other people's work. I showed my own work. I did projects with, you know, local foundations, and kind of really got into exploring art history and art in the space of a gallery context called the Sandbox. Within that, I also had a background in archaeology, which had a very strong kind of inspiration in my work, which is primarily based in the use of natural materials. So all of the pieces that you see in the show at the gallery are all made with natural pigments, most of which I find on location, site-specific, the San Ynez Mountains or Brazil or Santa Monica Mountains. I kind of, you know, use my background and just my desire to make, and I grind my pigments and I fasten them in these mediums and I put them in motion and see how they connect and engage with each other.
Your work is great. One of her pieces is right in front of us right there. And one of the things that is most interesting to me about your work is the process that you go through to make it. Can you talk a little bit about what it takes to make one of your paintings?
Yeah, well, I'd like to say a quote. Kierkegaard, I was rereading a little section of Robert Irwin's book, Seeing is Forgetting the Name of the Thing One Sees, and he makes a little quote about from Kierkegaard, which is basically, I'm going to read it, because it's the more you limit yourself, the more fertile you become an invention. And I feel like that's my life in my studio. That, you know, I don't take the opportunity to go and just buy my materials. I actually work within parameters of what I find. And so that really dictates the color schemes, that dictates, even the compositions, you know, because so much of bringing those rocks and minerals into kind of create this idea and feeling of landscape within the work. In terms of how I go about creating it, making it, when I was in high school at Ventura High, I started doing this street painting called Imaginari, and I used to make my own pastels. And I would do these large murals on the ground and put these pastels together. And so I got completely fascinated with powder pigments. And, you know, cut to 5 years later, I just got back from this archaeological dig I did in Carthage, Tunisia, and I thought about that. I was like, wow, if I can make paint and pastels out of just regular powder, why can't I just make it out of the landscape? So I started finding them, and then I appropriated a rock tumbler, which is usually used to polish minerals and gems, but I instead threw some stainless steel balls in there to pulverize the pigments into different micron sizes. So I have a lot of control over what size particles go into the liquid viscosities that are creating these frictions and patterns. As well as I also use a mortar and pestle to kind of break it up to begin with originally. But, you know, there are other things that are incorporated into it as well. But it really is, you know, so much is about selecting the pigments, making the pigments, separating them out, finding the right perfect combination of mediums. So that takes weeks and weeks and weeks. And then you get into this flow process where it just happens. You know, I'm not a person or a painter that goes in and redoes a painting. I don't go over. I go in, I engage with it in the moment, in that day, and then that's it. And so every move, every gesture, every combination of color and paint is all very intentional. And a lot of work and time and energy goes into that, but if I don't like it, I edit it out.
Sounds pretty intense. It's like a now or never experience.
It is.
How long between when your paint first hits the canvas until you're done with the process?
It depends on the size and scale of the work. It depends on the weight or the viscosity of the mediums that I'm using. Sometimes if I use a thinner wash, that dries a little quicker. But yeah, open time is a consideration because these are acrylic mediums that I'm using. So I have to be fairly considered of the timing, yes. And also the patterns that have kind of merged, I've coined it texture isolation. And if I don't have everything just right, the patterns don't form as perfectly as I want them to. So I do a lot of tests and studies and test subjects on Canvas to make sure that before I go into making a large work, it's right.
Excellent. Thank you. Kelly?
Yeah, I'm Kelly Berg, and I grew up in Wayzata, Minnesota, and went to RISD, the Rhode Island School of Design, and graduated from there back in 2008, and shortly after moved to Los Angeles. So I've had a studio in Venice for the past few years, right behind our house, which is great. And the body of work that I'm exhibiting in the show and that I've been kind of working with the subject matter for the past few years is really based on natural phenomena and kind of these natural disasters, these happenings in nature, landscape, and, you know, it's kind of in between abstraction and representational painting. I've always been interested in exploring both simultaneously. And at RISD, I focused on figurative painting, actually a lot of self-portraiture, and landscape painting. So I come from that background of representational painting. I always wanted to innovate with materials and kind of, you know, do things with paint, like keep pushing the boundaries of paint. And so I've been, you know, really kind of inspired by my childhood, like growing up in Minnesota and spent a lot of time with nature and saw a lot of crazy, like, severe weather, and the thunderstorms, and, you know, had a close call with a tornado once. So I was just kind of, my whole childhood, we would kind of go around in our RV on these road trips to the different national parks and have these adventures with my family, kind of out in nature. So really growing up with that, I've always been very connected with nature and wanted to kind of focus on that in the work. So the works in the show are really representational of kind of this recent series. So there's lightning and volcanic eruptions, and then kind of some more abstract pieces that, you know, represent maybe like topography of a landscape, like a rock formation. Which I'm really interested in geology and kind of these movements in the earth and trying to have paint kind of represent that imagery.
One of the things that I think is really interesting about your work is that you capture a moment in between when something really dramatic happens, and then it makes you question perhaps where is it leading to. Like, for example, that painting right there, looks like an explosion becoming, and what it's going to become is kind of the question you're asking.
Yeah, and I think also, like, with that piece, I've been incorporating, like, mirrors and metal into the work, and that it kind of allows, you know, the viewer to see themselves in the piece, which is kind of interesting. And, I mean, this piece, I was thinking about it recently, I saw lightning strike tree when I was at summer camp and saw it go down the tree, and then you could feel the vibration like in the ground, and that was, you know, quite an experience to like be that close to that phenomenon. And I think really I want to capture that energy of the earth in these happenings. And so these pieces do take a lot of time in the studio. One of the pieces in the show called Golden Electric, I was working on that piece for about 9 months. And my work is very, like, you know, detail-oriented. I, you know, the patterns that I'm drawing take months, basically, over. So I spend a lot of hours in the studio. And, you know, my process is I kind of work on several pieces at once. And, you know, it's a very layered process of kind of a combination of drawing and painting.
Thank you. Andy?
Yep. I'm Andy Moses, and I grew up in Santa Monica Canyon, went to CalArts for a couple years, moved to New York in the early 80s for nearly 20 years, and then made it back to Venice, where I have a studio about a block away from the house we live in. I've been there, I think, 18 years in the studio. And I recently had a 30-year survey, which was interesting to look at and kind of see all the points of connection of my work over those 30 years. And I feel like the one thing that really connects all the work is this interest in sort of finding this zone between abstraction and some kind of pictorialism, but not in a traditional way that we think of pictorial painting. So I work with, it's very process driven. I found many different techniques and approaches over the last 30 years to apply paint, but it's always very experimental. Although we start out with an idea of wanting to try certain things and wanting that process to suggest certain things. And I guess the work kind of, it evolves over time and just finds a road or an alley to go down until I've explored that. And then I'll have another kind of notion of where to push it next. But it's always in the zone between abstraction and images of nature, but not images of nature in a static sense. So I'm never trying to make a picture of something. Instead, I'm trying to make a parallel process in my studio that mimics processes in nature, maybe how the wind or water, how things have formed over time in the world. And I set up kind of these experiments in my studio that mimic those processes. And what's interesting is the image at the end looks like it was made by natural processes rather than by human hands. So I'm interested in that also, for an image to present itself to me and to come out of this process. But unlike, sort of, there was a lot of process painting back in the 60s and 70s. There was usually sort of one process to say, well, if I put a black tarp down and then let rain land on it, what would that be? So this is much more interactive. It's a constant sort of give and take. I never allow myself to take over, and I never allow the painting to take over. It's sort of a dance back and forth. And everything's wet, like Jennifer. I work in a way that's determined by time, so we relate to Brad that way as well. I have a certain amount of time to make something happen. But the prep process for a lot of these processes can be weeks or even a month. So back in the 80s, I was making black and white paintings that looked kind of galactic or microscopic. But the work always looks like it's in flux. So it looks like an image that's in the midst of forming and disintegrating at the same time, which I'm very interested in. So I feel like the biggest challenge in painting is to make something not look static, to make it look like it's alive, moving, changing, evolving. And for that reason, I'm also interested in plays of light on the surface. For the last 15 years, I've been working on convex and concave surfaces. So as you walk around, you get different vantage points. The color, the highlights change, everything kind of shifts. So I like this notion of something that's not stable and always changing.
In one of the videos I saw where you were talking about your work, you talked about transmutation and transformation happening at the same time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in this historical notion of alchemy, which started way back perhaps in ancient Egypt, but came kind of to its height in the late 1500s, early 1600s. And it was a notion of trying to change base metals, transmute base metals like lead into gold. But it was also very much a psychological transformation in that the initiate, the person who was trying to pull off this procedure, couldn't really achieve it until they had achieved a certain frequency, kind of brain pattern frequency, if you will, that you have to kind of elevate your own frequency in order to get to this next level and make this magical thing happen. So for me, I mean, I think all artists kind of work within that kind of paradigm, if you will, that you're trying to make something, but in the process, you're evolving your own psyche in the process. So it's very exploratory. And I think it's a good parallel for the work, because everything is sort of wet, and I kind of count on a certain amount of magic to enter in and, you know, present a great image to me. So everything is moving and shifting all the time, and I have to kind of decide when that magic moment is. And that's when I stop and let the paint dry.
Isn't that really where the magic is knowing when to stop?
It is, yeah. Absolutely. There's a lot of great artists out there that aren't great editors either, so you have to be a great editor of your work, not only in the process of making it, but later when you put it up on the wall and see which ones pass the test and which ones don't. So it's a very interactive, very organic process that I think does relate to alchemy and this notion of fractals as well, which has always interested me. And I've kind of put those things side by side. Fractals is the idea that patterns in nature repeat from very, very small scales to very large scales. So if you, you know, look at something under a microscope, it's going to connect very much to an aerial view of the Earth, to a pulled back view of the universe, that there's all these patterns. So I've come up with ways to kind of create these patterns by floating pigments, pouring it, manipulating it, and letting these patterns evolve and turn into things that look like so many things in nature across various scales, whether it be microscopic or landscape-oriented, aerial view of the Earth. And my notion about that is to try and really connect those things and show the connectivity or interconnectivity between all these different natural phenomena.
Excellent, thank you. I kind of feel like we should open up the conversation to possibly some questions.
Sure.
From other the audience or amongst ourselves at all. Does anybody have anything they want to say? Lila?
I'd like to know what other artists that you work with, or maybe even that aren't alive anymore, you guys are inspired by. Who excites you?
I'll give a chronological list. I love Egyptian art. Then let's fast forward to Venetian painting, Turner, Pollock, Polka, Kiefer, a lot of the artists in this room today. I just think there's so much good art being made all the time. But I guess the things I really look towards are, I mean, more of it is painting. I love light and space artists like Terrell, Doug Wheeler. I love earth artists like Smithson and Michael Heiser. Huge influence on me and my work, even though I make paintings. I just didn't see going out in the desert and all this dusty wind floating around. And yeah, I like to be in my studio. But I feel like it relates to earth art in the sense that I'm interacting with nature and in a very direct way and trying to get something to manifest.
I'm in love with Richard Tuttle,
yeah.
And Louis Bourgeois. And these are artists whose work mine doesn't really relate to very much, but I find their work in different ways magical. Louise Bourgeois is, you know, someone who's really mining her interior demons and trying to, you know, present them, try to domesticate them by externalizing them. I can relate to that. I think that's an incredible sort of pursuit as a human being and as a maker. It's very inspirational. And Tuttle, to me, is a guy who's like an alchemist in a sense. You know, he can sort of pick up something he saw blowing down the alley and a string that came off of his shoe and cobble those things together and come up with some fetish object that is obviously, you know, radiating some incredible alchemy of such a specific language that I always find that inspirational. radically different from my own work, but I can't get enough of it.
Nice.
Yeah, James Turrell, love. Experiencing his pieces, Robert Irwin, Ed Moses, Andy Moses, Robert Ryman, Francesco Clemente, Alice Neal, Anish Kapoor, Monet.
Thanks.
Yeah, I would have to say, well, definitely beginning with ancient Egyptian art, for sure, that's been a huge influence on my work, and going to Egypt and seeing the pieces themselves in person, I mean, that was definitely like a life-changing experience for me. And I like, I'm really inspired by art that kind of, you know, as a viewer, you enter a space and the whole space is the art, like, you know, cathedrals and Italy and, you know, traveling around that area of the world. I love, you know, art that surrounds you on all sides. And I'm really inspired by kind of the Hudson River School and American landscape painting. A lot of those artists, you know, showing different sides of the landscape and these kind of like, you know, dark landscape images and light and kind of just playing with these different ideas and exploring America for the first time, like, you know, going to these places that later became the national parks. Like, I mean, that is really amazing, seeing their first representations of those places like Yosemite and Yellowstone. And then kind of contemporary painters that I've been looking at a lot, Lee Bontecou. Her sculptural pieces are, you know, definitely one of my favorite artists, and Jada Feo with her very textured paintings, and, you know, working with all of the texture in my own work, I kind of, you know, I just think that movement of paint, and kind of you can really see the expression of her movements in the work, and Lynn Foulkes is actually one of my favorite artists as well, kind of combining again the representational and kind of these more abstract and very textured aspects. I mean, it's, definitely
inspiring. Thanks. I wanted to just ask one more question before we kind of wrap it up. Mm-hmm. If there's anything that these people should know about your show and what you guys are trying to do that might not be in the catalog, can you share it with us?
Well, maybe for me, the primary focus of my work is monumental sculptures that go in public spaces. So the work that they may see in the exhibition today are models.
Awesome.
So these are sort of studies to sort of figure out what might be worth pursuing on a larger scale.
How large do you think you'd make these pieces?
Oh, you know, 20, 30 feet.
Wow.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
I personally can't make them. I have no skills that'll allow me to do that. I'll have to have somebody help me out with that. But that would be the idea.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Really look forward to seeing those. Mm-hmm. Jen?
What was the question again?
If there's anything that the audience here should walk away from the show, from your piece, that might not be in the catalog or could be in the catalog, what would you like them to know about your work?
The piece in the front room features a particular palette of malachite, ground-up malachite, and an ochre that I got from the San Ynez Mountains. So it is a kind of localized capturing of that place.
Local artists,
yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, for me it would be, I guess, like the variety of techniques that I'm exploring. I think this particular selection of my work is really like nicely representing kind of what I'm up to in the studio right now, which, you know, working with the metal mesh as this kind of sculptural form that I'm painting over, and then to something like one of the pieces is actually scratch board that I've inked myself and, you know, built up with paint around it, and that's featuring kind of an opening of a cave, which I've been working with a lot of cave imagery recently. So that's one of the most recent pieces, and just that technique I've been exploring for quite a few years now, so I'm excited about that.
Thanks.
One thing to me that's really cool about this show and all of us being in this show together, I think it's perfect that it's in Ojai. I think we all have a connection here. My mother lived here for 22 years, so I've been coming up here for a long time. And there's something about this place, the nature of this place, and I think that we all have a certain relationship. Actually, Brad lives in a landscape that's very, very similar to here, up in the mountains in Malibu. Jen lives just down the road in Ventura. And so I think a lot of our interests in sort of this line between art and nature, this is sort of the perfect setting for it to unfold.
All right, thank you. Any other questions, comments? Go ahead, sir.
I had a quick question. One of the themes that came out from all of you was this process of setting things up so you can get out of the way and sort of let the magic happen. And I'm just curious how you prepare yourself internally for that process to unfold.
Wow.
I could give a stab at that. That's you go with the intention of making art, but ultimately art makes itself. And you there's a point where you, in my case, where you're, it's like believing in serendipity. You know, the plan is you're going to just take lefts, and then you make your first left. You go, well, right looks pretty good. Then you're off your plan, and something about the work itself, you just have to sort of say, well, what do you want to be? What's happening here? And you have to sort of, in my mind, in my way, I have to surrender, and it guides you. And you may end up with something, you know, you thought you were going to make a rocking chair, and you end up with a refrigerator. You don't know how that happened.
I mean, for me, it's the process of doing it again and again and again. And the more time I do it, the more unfolds, and the more tuned in and intuitive I can be about the work. But it's exciting. You go in with a plan, and hopefully something better comes out that you couldn't have imagined.
Yeah, I actually, sometimes I feel like I'm not prepared at all, and there is an emotional roller coaster that goes along with it. And like, you know, I think as an artist, I sometimes have difficulty accepting myself and what I make, and I get very vulnerable, you know. And so then you make something, and then you have to accept it. And I think Andy's right. You do that after making things for so many years. But I remember my husband told me one thing one time when I was having difficulty going into my studio. I didn't know where to start, and he said, "Babe, just go in and sweep the floor and clean your studio, and it'll unveil itself from there. It'll work out."
Robert Irwin was a big studio sweep.
Man after my own heart.
Yeah, for me, it's always staying open to change and, like, whatever happens. And I've really, like, I've been making art since I was, like, 5 years old. You know, I was just always drawing and painting. So I got really, you know, kind of open early on to, you know, like, letting new things happen in the work. And also, like, my experience at RISD, you know, just being open to kind of new pathways. And so I think, you know, my process in the studio, I've just always kind of allowed, like, these things to happen, you know, when maybe I spill some paint and then, you know, it creates something else. It's like, it's always an adventure. So I think staying open to that adventure is, important for me.
Thanks. Anybody else? I guess this will wrap it up unless you guys have any other comments you'd like to make. No?
Well, you know, I just want to say that it's been an absolute pleasure just being with this group, showing up, you guys, being so welcomed here, and I'm just really happy to be a part of this process.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's like a great homecoming.
that's our goal.
Thank you all. I want to encourage you to please check out the work that's here at the Foundation that is also for sale by Porch Gallery. Brad's work is not here because they were really greedy about sharing his sculptures. but you can see the other three artists' work on the walls, and there's also some pieces from our permanent collection that are here. And if you have questions, just let Chris or I know. And thank you for coming today. Please have some champagne or sparkling cider or water or cheese and crackers before you leave. And the Porch Gallery, if anyone needs directions, there's an Ojai map right there. It's just literally 2 blocks away. You can walk there. Okay?
Thank you to Porch Gallery there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.